Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
All right, guys, welcome back to the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast, everybody. Episode 173. I'm your host, Rick Shields. I'm here with co-host Guy Charnock.
Nice.
How are you, Guy?
Very good, Richard Shields. How are you?
I'm all right. I was just saying, though, I'll be honest, momentarily before the podcast started, my levels of energy at the moment are at a low.
Yeah.
And that's because we've had a tremendously busy week.
Nothing to do with your antics on the Wednesday night.
Nothing.
No.
So we are actually recording this on the Friday. Normally record a podcast on Monday, release it Tuesday. We're releasing it this time on Friday because we can't do it on Monday. So therefore, we probably won't be able to touch on loads about Bay Hill, the Arnold Palmer Invitational. But obviously, Scottie Scheffler wins it.
I was going to say this. Should we try and guess who's going to win?
Scottie Scheffler.
I think Rick Shields are going to win.
Thanks.
For your Break 75.
Well, if people have watched the Break 75, they'll sure know that I do not win. I think I could play that golf course. If I played it 10 times, I don't think my eclectic score would even potentially break par.
Have you ever heard that thing about if you got an infinite amount of monkeys with an infinite amount of typewriters, they'd end up, one of them or whatever, would end up writing the entire works of Shakespeare perfectly.
What?
Yeah. Because think about it, there's an infinite, so unlimited amount of monkeys, just literally, as far as the eye can see, there's monkeys, and they've all got typewriters. They'd just be typing away, just pressing random buttons. But it's fact that because it's infinite, one of them would actually type the whole works of Shakespeare perfectly.
What do you mean by this? If there was infinite Rick Shieldses,
yes,
playing infinite rounds at Bay Hill, there might be a chance I break 75.
80.
There's much more chance of a monkey typing the whole script of Shakespeare than me breaking 80 at Bay Hill. Genuinely, you've probably, hopefully a lot of you have seen the episode. If you've not, go and check it out. Genuinely, one of the hardest golf courses I've ever played in my entire life.
You know what? It looks insane. It looks so, so hard. But I think there's something really cool about dropping that video the same week the actual event
really
is on.
Good.
Because you can see somebody that people feel like they know and can relate to and what they actually shoot. Because I always say this, we've said this loads of times, that how good it would be to have on a tour event a scratch handicapper, a 9 handicapper, 18 and 28, all playing the tournament in the final group, or the first group of the day, the final group, whatever. One of the groups in the day, off proper tees and seeing what they actually all shoot.
I know.
You're that guy, essentially, in this. You're the guinea pig.
Right now, we've only seen Thursday's round of golf. John Rahm has gone out and shot 7 under par in the first round. I can't comprehend how you even do that. Like, genuinely now, I know we've done these 10-shot challenges, and I know John Rahm, his handicap came out recently at, like, something stupid.
It was plus 12, I think.
I think I would need a 20-shot head start against John Rahm right now.
At one of those courses as well, at the backs, yeah.
I just can't. First off, I played off right off the backs at the Bay Hill, the same tees that the tour pros are playing off. The conditions of the golf course was somewhat similar. I would imagine they're playing on faster greens now, you'd imagine, because obviously they speed them up as they get to the tournament. The rough, that's the thing, and it's really difficult. I was watching it on TV last night, and I'm like, it doesn't even look that bad, because it's not like links up to your knee rough. Mm-hmm. Which is like wispy, and you just know that that's going to struggle.
But that sometimes looks worse than it is occasionally, doesn't it?
It can do. Honestly, the rough at Bay Hill is so dense and thick and I'm going to use a very American word, kind of gnarly.
Oh, wow.
Like, it honestly, your ball goes in, even if it might only be 5 yards off the fairway, you're properly looking to find your golf ball. Like, there's no guarantee you're even going to find it because the ball just kind of sinks.
Yeah.
And then you again, I played off the back tee, so it's a ridiculous length golf course, 7,500 yards or something silly. I've then got like 200 yards into a par four, and I'm looking down and going, I don't even think I can hit lob wedge out of that lie. Yeah. Honestly, it was such a demanding golf course. And I watched these guys play it yesterday. I'm like, just it's a different, it's not even one level, two level. For me, it's like it's five levels further down the line.
You know what's mad? So I'm looking now at the scoreboard from Thursday. Again, this is the altitudes. This is old news for people. But as it currently stands, Ricky Fowler, which is good to see, shot 4 under par, right?
I mean, that's crazy.
Well, that's what I'm going to come on to. So 4 under par, right, is unbelievable good golf score. But I think sometimes, maybe naively, everyone knows the guy at their golf club who's really good, who's the club champion, who's off scratch, plus one, plus two, whatever, who may occasionally, when everything goes well for him, shoot a 4 under par. So you've kind of seen that score at your home course. But like you said, when you have to think about it realistically, these guys are shooting 4 under par at these golf courses that are so long, that are so difficult, with so much pressure.
The crowds and all sorts.
I think that's the worst thing with professional golf, in a sense of trying to relate to it, because if we use like running as an example now, if you're fit enough to run a marathon and you do it in 4 hours, right, at the London Marathon, and on the same day, Mo Farah ever does it in 2 hours 10, for example, you can be like, oh my, you can actually kind of understand the difference. They've almost doubled your speed all the way around. But with golf, you'll never, although you can play, like you've done the tour event courses in similar condition, you can never do it on the exact same day. So you can't really still get an understanding of how good these scores actually are.
Sometimes just thinking as you were chatting then, and you're right, it's almost uncomprehendable. And that's why I think the videos that I've managed to do at real championship golf courses do go down so well, because it is showing you the reality.
Closer to that reality,
it's showing you, this is honestly, you know, I'm not saying I'm played bloody brilliant, and you've seen my videos in the past, and sometimes I can play good, sometimes I play bad, but that was a significant, I don't genuinely believe I could play that golf course enough times to ever feel like I've conquered it.
No.
But what was interesting, I was just thinking as you were talking, is golf one of the rarer sports, I'm not saying the only sport, one of the rarer sports, where the spectators actually apply so much more pressure when you're playing in front of them? Or do tour pros just think differently? For example, I'm doing a London Marathon in a few weeks' time, 8 weeks' time. Now, when I'm running, practicing or whatever, or somewhat training, and I'm running in the road and there's no crowd, obviously, you know, I'm just running along, and I'm not getting any adrenaline. There's no extra support that's taking place there. I know come race day, because I've done half marathons before, I've done 10Ks, the crowd really spur you on. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't make it harder for you in a running race, they almost make it easier for you. Mm-hmm. Similar to, I could imagine, a football match, certainly if you're playing at home, like the home crowd almost really kind of drive you on, don't they?
That's the key though, the home crowd.
Yeah, it might be different against the away crowd. Where I feel like golf, it's almost like every golfer has talked about being super outrageously nervous on the first tee, even the best players in the world. Once they get past that, some of these guys just must absolutely thrive on the fact there's hundreds of thousands of people watching.
I think it's a very good point, but I think what we have to try and remember is the guys that get to this elite level have kind of worked their way up. So they have been the good junior golfer who might go to a tournament where there's everyone's mum and dad walking around. Then they get to maybe like kind of county amateur stuff where there might be a few of the members of the golf course walk around, and that kind of builds up and builds up. And then you get to the challenge tour where there might be a few thousand kind of mooching about. If you couldn't handle that level of pressure, you would never get to the next stage, if that makes sense. So if you've got 10 golfers from a golf club and put them on a PGA tour for a day, and there's 20,000 people around a hole, they'd absolutely flap it. I know I would. But these elite golfers, they're kind of made for it. They've worked through it, haven't they? And if they couldn't handle it,
they wouldn't have got to this stage, would they?
But I suppose, like you said, that when they feel that nerves in the first tee, I bet that is so much more about, right, this is the Masters, it's Sunday, I want that green jacket. As opposed to there's people down the left and right. Whereas for us, I'd be like, that guy on the right in that cap, he's going to get nailed at Pro V1.
All of them.
Yeah, every man's got a cap on.
They're all in danger. But yeah, no.
You know what I see, though? Instead of these PGA Tour events and the players playing on the PGA Tour or Live or wherever it might be, I would love to see an experiment to show how good these guys actually are. It never happened, obviously. But you get like the top 10 in the world go to a random, normal, run-of-the-mill golf club and play in the club championship. We've got like Joe Smith, who's off plus one, who's the favourite, who thinks he might shoot 69, 69.
John Rahm, Rory McIlroy.
So he'll shoot 57, 61 and win. Like, imagine seeing the actual levels. Because that's even, again, going back to like weightlifting. If you watch the World's Strongest Man, they're doing like 500 kilo deadlift and you can deadlift 120 kilo. You're like, that's four times what I can lift. That's insane. But you just don't get that with the golf as much. I'd love to see more reality of how good they actually are.
You know what they should actually do then? They should have a tour event. Regardless of what tour, I'm not getting into all that politics again. Or actually, we might be doing later on in this episode. Actually, one tour event each year is, like you say, it's at an unbelievably public golf course that's like 6,200 yards.
Bucket holes.
Just imagine four rounds of golf for those guys where most par fours, they're going to be driving and literally chipping on the green. Most par fives like par fours. Like, what would they actually get to? What number could be obtained? Like, a tournament could be won at 50 under par.
Yeah, I think it would.
I think it should be done. It'd be really funny.
So, today's podcast, that was quite a nice kind of flow into the intro. We've got quite a lot to cover. We've got, obviously, big news on the PGA Tour kind of going down the route of Liv, which has caused a lot of stir. And again, we are appreciate this. We're coming a little bit early, so people might have heard a bit of this by now. People want to hear your take on this, Rick, all the time.
I'll be honest with you. I don't know a lot about it just yet.
Okay.
Because it kind of broke yesterday, did it? Or a couple of days ago?
I think it was the day before. So basically, there's going to be more events on the PGA Tour now that there's going to be no cut. So essentially, at the minute, they have, is it the WGCs and the FedEx? There's no cuts. Obviously, you have to earn your way in to get into those. They're now released, I think it's another, is it, so it's from next year. I'm going to Google it now because I feel like I should know a little bit more about this. But I have looked at some bits of it. I've heard some of the opinion. I've heard Rory kind of defending it as well. There's going to be more events from next year where you've got no cut for basically the top players. And the whole point of it really is so the PGA Tour can go out to sponsors and say, look, MasterCard, sponsor this event or whatever it might be, and we can guarantee you that Rory, Tony Finau, Scotty Scheffler will be there Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, which should therefore mean TV viewings are going up anyway because people want to watch those guys. So it's worth a lot more for them, essentially. It's copying the Live model to some degree.
It is because I did definitely see the tweet and Instagram that Liv put out of facts of like flattery is the best form of imitation, is it?
Or imitation is the best form of flattery.
Because effectively, our PGA Tour are saying, yes, we actually do believe a no-cut model is more beneficial. It is more beneficial to a number of different people, obviously. Sponsors, like you say, they get more bang for their buck. The viewers.
Yep.
Like, I must admit, I can't think of a time where I've planned to go to an Open Championship on a Saturday or Sunday and been disappointed because I've not seen the favourite player. However, you could argue that would have probably happened last year at the Open. Mm. Like, there would have been a lot of fans that would have been so lucky to get tickets on Saturday and Sunday for the Open last year. Now, obviously, the Open is still going to have a cut and everything else. And Tiger wasn't there.
Yeah.
But, like, it is a bit of a shame, that, isn't it?
It is, but I suppose that's kind of part of the magic of golf, isn't it? But with this new thing, they're saying there's going to be events that are going to be 70 to 78 players with no cut, but it won't apply to the majors, the players, or the FedEx Cup playoffs. And five spots can be earned through performances in non-designated events. So I think the whole point of this is they're saying, yeah, there's no cut, but you can still earn your way in. Whereas obviously with Liv, people are arguing, but there's no really way of earning yourself way in. Oh, I think there is, though, actually, after the Asian Tour, but I think ultimately we were quite concerned. I know you were quite concerned about Liv starting and PGA Tour and almost too much kind of friction. But you must say it's probably making the game better for both parties, isn't it? This competitiveness.
Yeah, it's super interesting at the moment, the world of professional golf. Like, I mean, the people who are really benefiting are the players. I mean, they're making so much more money over the last couple of years, aren't they? Whether they have signed for Liv or whether they remained on the PGA Tour, they must be like, bloody hell, this is, we're bloody cashing in on this. It'd be interesting to see what viewing figures look like.
Yeah,
I'd heard some reports that Liv's viewing figures last week weren't particularly impressive for the one in Mexico. I don't. You never really get to see PGA Tour's viewing figures as such, because I think it's quite a complicated way of monitoring viewing figures, certainly in the USA, if it's not online. So it would be really interesting, though, are genuinely more people watching golf right now, or has it had an opposite effect where people are like, well, I don't want to watch, therefore I'm not going to watch anything.
So
I don't know, I get a bit like that, you know.
Really?
Sometimes if it's almost like too much choice, it's like, oh, I can't choose, I'm just going to not bother. Like, I do, honestly. And I think sometimes I feel...
But do you get that with the things that you like, though? So, like, I get if you go to Netflix and there's not really anything that you fancy in watching, there's almost too much choice. Like, oh, you know what? I can't remember making a decision. But if you like golf, if you went to a restaurant and there was a burger and a pizza and you like both, you're probably not going to go, I won't get anything there. And you go, oh, it's hard to choose, but I'll go for the burger. If you love watching golf, I can't imagine someone's going to sit down and go, do you watch Live or PJ Tour? And then go, I'm not going to watch either.
I don't know. I've certainly found myself in situations a bit like that.
Really? Yeah. The golf?
Yeah, a little bit.
Wow.
Not it just because you at the moment, certainly when the weeks clash, you have got to make a choice. And I think sometimes that choice is kind of so complicated or hard to do, or you're not quite sure which one you want to watch on. So I end up either watching highlights or don't particularly watch as much live golf.
That is.
Where this week it's probably a bit easier. Obviously, we've just missed it, but at the Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill, what event? Like, you can only really watch that. There's no other choice. But, it's an interesting turn from the PGA Tour. They've obviously had some kind of jocular backlash that it is almost copy and live. It'll be interesting to see how it all pans out. And like I say, I think for a viewer, they want to see the best players more of the time. And this is offering that.
So, one of the features this week I've copied from the internet.
Okay.
So there's different, like, I don't actually know who does it, but there's different, I think it might be GQ or other people where they get like a celebrity. We couldn't find one today, so we got you.
Okay, substituted in.
And you ask them some of Google's most searched for questions on said person.
Okay.
So I typed in, does Rick Shields? And loads of different things came up. So I'm going to start at the bottom and work the way
up. Not sure how to think about this. Okay.
What bag? Some of them aren't super exciting. Some of them are a bit more juicy.
Oof.
Okay, you ready? Okay. Some juice. So what bag does Rick Shields use?
That's
so what people are asking on Google. What bag does Rick Shields use? People are asking this on Google.
Currently, I use, I think I've had a couple of versions of this. It's the Ping, is it the Hoofer Crazy Light?
It's a skinny one.
I think it's the Ping Crazy Light.
You're a skinny bag guy, aren't you?
I love it. But then, you know what? The other day, I was thinking, God, there's a lot of stuff in here in my bag. I have so much bloody stuff in my golf bag.
Well, can we talk about my issue with your golf bag we discussed yesterday on the golf course?
Yeah.
This is a sin. And I'm surprised you're the guy that does this. So Rick carries an umbrella, which is fine. He doesn't want to get caught in the rain. He keeps his umbrella in his actual golf bag, like stuffed down with the clubs, as opposed to the umbrella section at the side.
I don't like it in the umbrella section at the side.
I
don't think the bag is big enough. Maybe if I had a bigger bag, but I don't like how it sticks out. Like, it looks a bit wrong. It looks a bit kind of like it shouldn't be belonging.
What do you think on that, Matt? What's your verdict? Yeah, of course he is. He's an outside bad guy. It's really, I'm surprised by you. I really am. Maybe it hurt, actually. But anyway, you do you. Next one. What putter does Rick Shields use?
Well, so I'm going to come on to this in a moment because we've did a lot of filming this week and I've been experimenting with different putters. I put one putter in the bag and it lasted 3 holes. And I've gone back to my even roll ER2.
Yeah.
I don't know why I can't stop using it.
That's a good thing.
I don't put bloody great, do I? But for me, it's one. It seems to be one that I like.
You putted well yesterday, actually.
I did, actually. One that I kind of go back to a lot. I've probably got similar to... I've probably got too many choices of putters. And therefore, I kind of go back to the one that I've used for so long.
Well, that's good.
To be honest, this year, I do want a proper putter fitting and get properly dialed in with it.
What brand does Rick Shields wear?
Well, it's an interesting question. So you might have seen, since July last year, a lot of my UK and European followers will know this brand, the Golden Eagle. This is Lyle and Scott.
It is.
A brand that has incredible heritage in the world of golf.
Yes.
Then transitioned beautifully into the world of fashion.
Beautifully.
And now they're getting back into dominating the world of golf again.
You wear it well.
I do my best. I need to lose a bit of timber to continue to wearing it better.
I've got a marathon coming up though, so I've got fall. What? I've got a marathon.
That's true. It'll fall off me. I'll be ordering a small soon. Yeah, but I mean, growing up, what's fascinating for me in the brand is you go on Facebook every now and again now and you get the memories that come up. Mm-hmm. From 15 years, 16, 17 years ago, I'm there rocking it, a young Ricky Shields, and I'm there with the Golden Eagle, little Iron Scott.
Nice.
So it looks good. So, yeah, it's a brand that you should check out. The link is in the description of this podcast.
Does Rick Shields do lessons?
I do not anymore, and it saddens me. I loved coaching. I love being a coach. There's a reason why I got into YouTube, as many of you know. I think over the times of increasing the amount of content we make and how much more of a production it is now, the only time I could feasibly coach would be at a weekend. And obviously I've got three kids and a family, so I decided to spend time with them rather than coach.
This is a good one. This is an exciting one. How does Rick Shields make money?
How do I? How do I make money? So we make money on YouTube.
Yeah. That's not a secret.
We make money through having sponsorship, such as our wonderful sponsors at Lion Scott, Echo, mm-hmm. Top Tracer. And then we also do the podcast.
Yeah.
That makes money. We do Facebook. Mm-hmm. That does all right for money.
I think that's something that... It's a question you hear getting asked less now, because I think 5 or 6 years ago when YouTube was just kind of really taking off, people were like, how does a YouTuber make money? I think most people now are savvy to it. That when you watch a YouTube video, maybe before that or during that or at the end, there's an advert, and that advert could be for kind of anything really. Sometimes you can skip them and sometimes you have to watch the whole advert. And obviously when that advert is played, YouTube make a revenue and the creator makes revenue. Very kind of almost similar to when you might get a local free newspaper that doesn't cost you a penny, but within that there's adverts that, you know, local businesses might be paying that paper to put their advert in. It's a very kind of similar model really, but obviously on a larger scale.
And then I'm going to get into the world of boxing. I think that's next.
Yeah.
So I'm going to call out Jake Paul right now.
Oh, how long in the round would he last with Jake Paul?
How long in a round would he last with me?
I reckon you'd last 5 seconds. I reckon he'd be really, really, yeah. Jab.
Joking?
Yeah, no.
I was cocky year seven back in the day.
The biggest. So there's a few more of these.
And then OnlyFans.
OnlyFans, yeah. It's weird that we ended up actually, though, the OnlyFans, we're refunding money. So rather than making money on OnlyFans, we're actually losing money. People pay like, no,
I'm paying them back.
Yeah. This might have to be a bit quick. It's quite a long answer, but what does Rick Shields have in the golf bag?
Ping 430, in my golf bag or clubs?
I like clubs. What's your clubs?
Ping G4 30 max.
25.
Ping G4 25. Ping G4 25 max.
Yes.
Driver in the bag. Cobra F7 fairway wood. I've currently put a new 3-iron in the bag, which I believe is a Titleist U500. I've got Titleist T100 irons. I've got an even roll putter. I use Vokey wedges and I use a Pro V1.
Yep. Been quite similar for a while now, really. It's not changed too much.
I need to change everything.
I don't think you need to change everything.
Every single club in my bag
needs to stay.
Every single club in my bag is going to change.
Question, did Rick Shields qualify for the Open?
No.
Okay, cool. does Rick Shields have merch?
Soon.
Mm.
Watch. I know we've said this a lot. I know we've often said soon before without an actual idea.
Well, like it'll come, it'll eventually happen soon.
We've now got an idea and genuinely it'll come soon. We did a merchandise survey for a lot of people who listen and watch, probably might even filled it out because we had like 40,000 replies. You've told us what you want and we are going to deliver on those demands.
Yeah, you are.
Coming soon.
Last question, very simple one. Does Rick Shields have a wife?
I do.
If that's actually the most searched question, that might mean there's a lot of people out there looking, thinking, I'm interested in Rick Shields. But is he taken? Is he off the market? I don't know what clubs he uses. That can rank further down the list.
Who the bloody hell would marry him?
Ah, yeah.
I think that's more what it's like. They probably more feel sorry for my wife. So we have had a busy week.
We have.
I do feel somewhat drained because this week we've been out filming. Mm. I've played golf back-to-back times. Forgot how bloody hard it is.
Let me get my violin out.
Walking and playing golf. Certainly hitting the amount of shots I do.
Well, we played JCB yesterday, which again, I'll come in a couple of weeks, that video. We are banking videos a bit more advanced now, being more organised, so it's quite cool that we're filming stuff now that might come out in like 3 or 4 weeks' time.
Well, just a quick one on that. So, Bay Hill was last Friday.
Yes.
This Friday, to coincide with the Players' Championship, we've done a really good job here, Sawgrass, break 75 at TPC Sawgrass.
Wow.
Again, off the back tees.
Wow.
With a caddy.
Wow.
With the iconic 17th hole coming up. So that's going to be, that is going to be, I think you're going to love that video.
On the same week as Sawgrass.
Of the same week. So that's going to come out Friday.
Yes.
Then the following week, I filmed a really cool video this week with Little Aston.
Yes.
I know you didn't come to the trip, but Little Aston, what a lovely little place. Honestly, I was really impressed with Little Aston. Beautiful setting, really, really good golf course. I also played with a Hollywood A-lister, which will come up. I'm not going to kind of give that too much away yet.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'll be coming out in the video. And then, like you say, yesterday, you and me, played at JCB.
Should we give a little bit of that, or do you want to save it?
Well, first off, JCB, a bit similar to Bay Hill, it's a golf course. I could probably play 1,000 times off the back tees, off the proper back tees, and struggled to break par. Yeah. However, yesterday, I'm not, that's all I'm going to say. It was fun though, wasn't it?
It was a very different format for break 75.
But it was fun.
It was really good, yeah. I'm excited for that one to come out. And that format, if it goes down well, we might do a bit more often. Who knows? But I've got a couple of questions for you, Rick. It's that time of the show. We've not had it for a while, it's Dear Rick.
Oof.
So this is that point we need to be really thinking hard.
Oh, by the way, sorry, quick one. Little Aston,
yeah.
I met real life Ian.
Oh, wow.
The secretary from our made-up fictional clubhouse.
Called Ian.
Who's called Ian.
Do you know about Ian?
He does.
Oh, wow.
He does now, anyway. So I met the real Ian, who's the manager at Little Aston. He would be a perfect Ian for us. Now, there's no Doreen there,
okay.
And there was no Baz, okay?
You can find him.
But Ian, we've got him.
You know what's mad, then, statistically? Obviously, we're very grateful. A lot of people watch and listen to this podcast. We could say a person now, and they could be listening. So there's Darren, for example. He's driving his van right now. Darren in his white van. He's driving along thinking, oh my God, I'm Darren. I've got a white van.
There's John.
Yep.
Who's out walking the dog.
Of course.
In a field.
Could be many Johns.
Yep. But we're talking about you, John.
What about Peter on a treadmill? There's a Peter on a treadmill listening to the podcast.
Definitely.
Yep.
And there is a Sarah.
Yeah.
Who is currently She is playing golf.
Okay.
And she's listening to the podcast.
With headphone in?
Yeah, why not?
That's the least statistic one, I think. I'm not sure about that. Headphones on the golf course. Is it a good thing or a bad thing?
Okay, Sarah's driving to the golf course. Better. About to play golf. Safely. And she's listening. Very quick one on that. I remember years and years and years ago when I was a kid, I was in my bedroom watching TV and tucked up in bed. And weirdly, I had my dressing gown on.
What's that again? You're right. Watching TV?
I said, just a quick one on that.
Right, yeah.
I remember this funny story. I was a young kid.
Yes.
I was probably under 10, 8 or 9. And I had TV in my room and I was in bed with my dressing gown on. And on TV was Sesame Street.
Yeah.
Okay. And on Sesame Street, they started saying, you know, basically, oh, how did it come about now? Right. Oh, I've got fur on my body and all this. And it's like, I know you watching, you've got fur as well. And I'm sat there in bed with my dressing gown on, looking down, going, I have got fur on. How does he know? I remember jumping out of my bed, running downstairs and going, Mum, the buddy whatever from Sesame Street can see me. And she's like, what? he can see me. I've got fur on. So yeah, just reminded me of that little funny antidote. That was pictured very differently in my head. But
no,
yeah,
it's good.
But anyway.
So do you want some Dear Rick questions then?
Let's do it.
Okay. So I've got two. Do you want number one or number two? Okay, so for everyone listening at home, they might be thinking, what's just happened? Or watching, there was a moment then in time that we've had to cut from the podcast. Something absolutely, and I mean this, gigantic has just happened.
I'm actually still shaking. I feel like it was a moment. Do you remember the TV show, like, This Is Your Life?
Yes.
It felt like that for
this
a moment.
This is your life. Yeah, so...
I was presented with something...
That's insane.
...that you'll all know about. And believe me when I say this, everybody is going to know about this in the entire world.
Yes. So frustratingly...
I'll make sure of it.
Yeah, frustratingly, we can't talk about it now. We were mid-podcast, so obviously we had to cut there. Something happened in the studio. Somebody came and met us with some very important and very special news. And
right.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I don't know how I'm going to concentrate, but I believe we're on a Dear Rick.
We were on a Dear Rick.
Suddenly my energy level has gone through the roof. I was quite kind of lethargic this morning, but now I'm fully operational.
Even I feel flustered for you, Rick. So anyway, Dear Rick is from Anonymous. He's asked because he can't be asked with the hassle from the members. Okay.
Camera can't see your screen, can it?
Can you see it? No, of course. Good. So, it says, recently I've been playing pretty well, brackets for me. I'm averaging around 37 points over the last four rounds. I'm pretty consistent around that mark too. I've won one and come second in another comp and then fifth just this week. Admittedly though, from the front forward winter tees, making the course shorter than usual and not counting for WHS purposes. However, here's the kicker. I've got a TaylorMade Sim Max that I bought a few years ago, driver that is. I've not used it once during those four rounds. I'm driving with my Wilson Staff 3-wood and my 21-degree driving iron. It's also Wilson Staff. I've lost one ball over the course of those four rounds, and the 21-degree hybrid has outdriven my playing partner's drivers on a couple of occasions. He said, I don't know about you, but I think a sweetly struck driving iron is the best feeling in golf. So, my dilemma, I can't use that driver. I've got it set on a full draw setting and still slice it like Roberto Carlos. But the tees are about to go back to the kind of normal summer position. And they're probably going to be out of range for a lot of the par fours. So my chance of improving much beyond where my current handicap is will be reduced. Do I, and the two questions here, do I, A, accept that I'm going to hit lots of good golf shots and keep getting comments off other people like, there's no way you can be a 17 handicap with that swing, but knowing that I won't score very well because I'm not going to be hitting a driver, so he's not getting the most distance that he should kind of be getting, or... should he get some lessons on the driver, take a risk that he might go backwards in kind of terms of ability before going forwards, but ultimately that might help him get down to the kind of low teen, high kind of single figure handicap that he's hoping for?
Got to be honest.
Your head's still going in it.
I'm seeing your mouth moving and I'm hearing words. But
right.
So basically, should he stick with a hybrid or should he have lessons?
Yes, there's a guy.
For me, he's obviously enjoying hitting hybrid on a shorter golf course and he'll learn those skills and he'll continue to hone them skills as the golf course gets longer. But yes, I would definitely look at maybe don't go from hybrid straight to driver. Like, there's quite a few clubs in between there. Mm. So let's say you're hitting this hybrid however many. Did you say it was 21 degrees of loft?
Well, he's hit his three wood as well. So he's driving on three wood. But he's basically, so long story short, he's hitting his driver horrendously. It's costing him shots. His three wood and his driving iron are working for him, but he's obviously losing distance. Once the course goes back to full length, how's he going to get his handicap down?
I definitely think if you can take some of those skills that you feel more confident with your three wood now and be open with a golf coach about how you can potentially gain more distance with a driver, then that could absolutely be the perfect pathway. The other thing I'd like you to try and try out is maybe like a mini driver. You know, something a bit more lofted. Yeah. So it doesn't need to be particularly a three wood. It's almost like a bigger version of a three wood. But with a little bit more loft, that could definitely be a nice pathway.
Are you okay?
No. I feel like I've not given him the right answer.
Well,
but
there was another day, Rick, that I'm not going to bother with because I think your headspace now is flustered.
I'm not sure how I'm going to operate for the next few weeks.
No.
I've now got to, and again, all will be revealed soon, I feel like I just need to get onto the practice ground and grind. Like, more than I ever have done in my entire life.
Yeah.
I'm nervous. But anyway, we'll come on to that shortly.
I've got some good questions on Facebook, and one I've actually answered on Facebook, but I'll ask anyway. First of all, give me 7 reasons why somebody should join the Facebook group. Go now.
7. Quick. Oh, wow. Okay, that's quick. Tough. It's free.
Yep.
You get really fun, entertaining content.
Yep.
You learn about every member's hole-in-one.
Yep.
Guaranteed. You get to see pictures of Ian, Doreen and Baz.
Yep. 3 more.
And you also get, once you get approved, it's like a satisfaction level. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
I know you approve them.
Yep.
And as long as you don't say anything dodgy, you won't get banned.
Yeah, one more.
It's free.
Okay.
Even though I said that first, but it is free.
Fair enough. But what about people that don't like Facebook because they don't like Mark Zuckerberg?
I would then follow the Rick Shields Golf Show Instagram account.
Still Mark Zuckerberg.
I would then look at making sure that you follow us on the Clubhouse, which, believe it or not, is something we set up on Twitter.
Don't like Elon Musk.
Therefore, we think we still have a MySpace account somewhere that you can check out. Write a letter.
Oh, yeah. Stamped addressed envelope to Rick Shields at a random golf course somewhere. So the question actually is from
Rick Shields at the clubhouse.
Mike Swiffener says, any thoughts on playing break 75s at some more affordable golf courses? So I responded, and I'll respond verbally as well now, 100% this is the plan. Just in reality, this time of year, and without being rude, a lot of the more affordable golf courses aren't in great condition. Simple
That's
as that,
true.
Isn't it,
yeah.
Really?
And to be fair, when we look at actually a lot of the break 75s we've done, been very, very, very lucky to do some super, super high-end golf courses, no question about it. And some that probably majority of people listening and watching, and this is me not being flashy or anything, but will maybe never get a chance to play. Some of them have been really high-end exclusive private golf courses, which to some degree, I love the comments where people go, wow, I'm probably never going to get a chance to play his golf course, but now I feel like I have played it through watching your video. So that's real benefit. The affordable ones, we've still done a lot of the affordable ones. Certainly, let's say, like Crail up in Scotland and Ely, like those ones are very, you know, playable.
Yeah.
We've done the Marriott Worsley Park and we've done a few others as well. So yeah, we could maybe look at doing almost like a budget series that's like budget break 75s.
Yeah. But that's it though. We've said this before. There's loads of great golf courses out there that don't have to cost a fortune. It's just that typically, not always the case, but certainly where we are in the northwest of England, the kind of more cheaper golf courses and more parkland courses, obviously, which get a little bit wetter and a bit damp. And it's kind of, we don't really want to play those courses and fill them in. It's not fair on the golf course as well. A lot of these golf courses obviously pride themselves on, you know, having good membership, but also attracting visitors. And if we go to the venue when it's not in its best condition and film a video there, and hopefully, you know, 500,000, 1 million people watch it, doesn't look great on that golf course, does it? Yeah, you're still in cloud cuckoo land. I had a really good question, I've lost it. Anything you want to say while I fill in and find some questions?
I don't know anymore. I feel like my reality of life has changed. There's Monday. Yesterday, we released a brand new driver video.
Can I just say, before we come on to that, could we say a little bit of why you're excited? Like, what's just been announced in the sense of what it is, but not what it is?
It's every golfer's dream.
Okay. Is that...
in a sentence.
But it's not... yeah, okay. Yeah.
With the video we released yesterday...
the Wilson driver.
that was one of the most interesting reviews I've done this year.
Yeah.
Drivers arrived from Wilson. And let's be honest, over the last few years, Wilson have, well, even if we go back like 50 years, Wilson have had an incredible reputation for making very good products, certainly in the iron market.
I think they've still won more majors with their irons than any other brand.
I'm pretty sure as well they've won something like a major every decade for the last 5 years, wow. 5 decades or something. So they've incredible. I've used the irons, loved them. But in the driver market, I think at once upon a time they did really well. But with the introduction of TaylorMade and Callaway and Ping and Titleist now kind of coming more to the forefront and Cobra, Wilson have lost huge market share in their driver market. Even to the point, and obviously I was part of this, they did a TV show, Driver versus yes. Driver. There was Driver versus Driver and Driver versus Driver 2, which I was a judge on the TV show, which was super interesting over in America and mostly filmed in Chicago, and it was on the Golf Channel, where you got, if you've not heard of it or seen it, you got quite literally normal people would design a driver and Wilson would then decide over many different rounds and elimination processes. It's almost like X Factor meets Dragon's Den meets golf club manufacturing. And it came, they came out with a driver at the end of it, the Cortex. From that point then, that was, again, a very, very good product. But in my opinion, and again, I was even on the TV show, it was priced in way too high.
Okay.
Like, it was priced well into the 500s, and it was almost competing with TaylorMade, Callaway, etc.
Yep.
Where I think this is where this driver they brought out this year, the Dynapower, is a much cleverer driver. And I mentioned it in the video, in the fact that the pricing is much more affordable to some degree compared to some of the big names. And the performance was bloody impressive.
Well, that's it. Wilson are quite a strange brand. And I say that in a kind of nice way, because they're number one in basketball when it actually comes to things like basketballs. They're number one in tennis when it comes to rackets. They are a massive sporting goods brand. And you said, over the recent years in the golf world, they've been a real competitor and they've made some really good pieces of kit. Like you said, notably irons. They kind of lost the way from early to mid-2000s with some of the Deep Red range, because Deep Red was one of their marquee drivers. And then they kind of changed the Deep Red brand to be more kind of budget. And I think that kind of, they have the Wilson staff more kind of serious line, and the Deep Red was a bit more budget. But I think they kind of got a bit lost, and it became a brand that people just saw as a bit lower than your top brand. So it's kind of, you'd have all those brands you reeled off, Callaway, TaylorMade, Titleist, etc. You could argue people might see Cobra as being half a tier below that, and then Wilson again kind of another tier below that. So they want to make a serious driver. They've employed more guys in the R&D team, I believe. They've upped their team. They're kind of really wanting to go full throttle on this driver. But yeah, they're in a tough spot with price, because if they charge £500 for a driver, it's going to be very hard to turn people away from Stealth 2, from Paradigm, to Wilson, let's be honest. If they charge £300, well, naturally, as a consumer, you see that's been, it must be worse, because it's £200 cheaper.
Yeah.
So this new driver, the carbon version, like you said, £400, is a good price point.
Well, the carbon one's £400, and the titanium one was
£349.
That is the window at the moment where there is a gap. Because even Cobra have fallen out of that window. Like, Cobra have kind of got a bit guilty in getting into the mid to high £400 for a driver. Where that kind of gap where F9 sat all those years ago in £350, I think is a real sweet spot.
I think what's hard for brands to do is, we know that now, you know, most of the golf brands who are making equipment are making good clubs. That's a fact. But people often go for fittings with one or two brands in mind. So people might say, right, 2023, I want a new driver. I do fancy trying Stealth 2 and I fancy trying Paradigm. And they might try those out and they might bring something else into the equation. But really, if you put a Wilson in the golfer's hands, even if it performs as well, they're going, yeah, but I didn't come for a Wilson. I want to have that new Paradigm that John Rahm's using and winning with. Or I want that Stealth 2 because I do like the Stealth and the carbon face story, etc. You've got to give them a reason to go, well, actually, I'm hitting this Wilson as well as these two, and there's X reason. And if that comes down to price, and it's a little bit cheaper, that could sway some people.
Do you think in this day and age, right now, where, you know, with the internet, with the presence of tour players and everything else, do you think as an industry, golfers have become more brand snobs?
Hmm.
Do you think it's changed over the last 10, 20 years?
That's a good question. I don't know if it has.
You know what's interesting? I think there's more loyal fans to brands. So I think there's fans out there now that almost would only ever stick to one brand. Personally, I see that a little bit more these days. But on the flip side, when I say about brand snobbery, like some of these kind of underground brands, like let's say, but I don't want to do these guys a disservice, but like Vice Golf Ball, like Vice is almost quite a cool brand to like, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not the big boys, it's not a Callaway or TaylorMade, etc. But it's a brand that's managed to captivate an audience and excite people.
I think on that there's two things. I don't know if there's more brand loyalists now than would have been 15 years ago, 20 years ago. But it might appear there is because of the internet.
That's
so
true.
15, 20 years ago, if you were a massive Cobra fan, let's just say, you might just have their gear and go to the golf club and play it. Whereas now, that same guy might have a Cobra hardcore fan Instagram page.
Yeah, that's true. It's a bit more visible, I guess.
Yeah, and I think on that, though, like we said before, with products and certainly with golf ball, but everything, there's so many brands out there, but there's a lot of brands that are established. And in some ways, it feels like there's a lot of golf ball brands, but actually there's Titleist, there's Bridgestone, there's Strix, and there might only be six or seven in reality for people to actually really choose. So when a new brand comes that kind of disrupts the marketplace in some way, I think it can become quite cool, like a Vice. It's like, oh, that's a bit different. I want to be guys on the first tier, and everyone's going, what are you using? Pro V1, number one. Bridgestone, number two. Vice, number four. Why do you use Vice? Because I do.
It's cool. Like, I'm cool on it.
Yeah. Hat on backwards.
I think for me, is it almost these new, like, let's say Wilson with something such a hardcore heritage, like so many older golfers will know about Wilson as a golf club manufacturer. How interesting now, let's say a new wave of new golfer that's coming into the world, which is a huge amount over the last few years, that they actually know the heritage and the story of Wilson. And are Wilson giving that message enough? Have they pushed hard enough in that category? Or are they almost relying so much on their heritage?
In a way, though, how much does heritage matter? So, for example, if Wilson had have signed Micah Morris and Grant, would that have done enough to get a whole new audience going, oh, Wilson's cool. I know Wilson from the basketballs he used at school. I know it's a brand. I recognise it. Like, would that... Does the newer golfers care that 50 years ago the Irons won the Open? They probably don't, do they? So I think heritage matters in terms of building like credibility. But does it matter to a new golfer if they know a brand's new or old or whatever? Does it matter to them as long as it seems to be cool?
Yeah.
And Wilson, that being horrible, it's not cool. Is it really?
No.
It's not a cool brand.
Even the logo possibly looks even just a little bit kind of older styling.
The logo would look cool, like a jumper, a baggy jumper, something that's quite cool.
Like a student at St. Andrews would wear it.
Like a champion-style jumper.
100%.
On a driver, though, is it that good? But does that matter? I don't know.
But then again, Callaway's logo isn't great.
It's true.
They tried to change it, but it's kind of gone almost like calligraphy again.
Yeah.
I mean, they've had that for a while, but
you were that Wilson driver weller, didn't you?
I really liked it. Loved it for the sound. Not a lot. I would consider it. It would take me a little bit to really. It sounds ridiculous. I'd almost have to test the Wilson driver slightly more just to make sure I've gone. Yeah, no, that is definitely the right choice. Mm. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's almost like am I definitely right in this? But I've had Wilson irons in the bag loads of times. It doesn't faze me at all. I put a Wilson set of irons in tomorrow without as much thought. But Wilson driver just feels like that's quite a big shift. On new equipment, though, and I've mentioned it a few times through this podcast about I might look at tweaking and changing and completely having a full new set of everything, which I genuinely think I'm going to do this year. We're going to give you one more final update of the new studio that is being built next door. Now, last week, certainly if you were very early to the podcast last week, a little couple of minute clip was left in where I had to go and tell next door to be quiet as they were building.
Yes.
Guy very nicely swept up the mess.
The mess.
I'm not going to say it's anyone's fault. So that's been built.
Yes.
It's what now 90% built?
Yes.
It's looking good, isn't it? Looking good?
Yeah, it's looking good.
I hope it's really looking good.
No, it's looking absolutely class. I think we've said this a number of times. The review channel is coming very, very soon. We're thinking around the start of April, it'll be here and ready to go. And we wanted a base where you can review golf clubs indoor, still some outdoor as well, but certainly for the new channel, we see a lot of that being indoor because it works really well. The facility, don't want to get carried away, but I think it's world class.
I think genuinely when we first launched that channel, and we're going to post the first reveal video on the main channel because it's main channel worthy, I do actually think it's going to blow people's socks off. No. I actually think people who are watching, suddenly look down at the feet.
Socks fell off.
They've actually fallen off their feet.
Yeah, that does happen.
So, yeah, it's class.
Is that why the builders keep walking out with no socks on?
Every time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a legal requirement I've set in stone.
No shoes, no socks.
No shoes are allowed in the new studio. No. I'm actually going to test barefoot.
Yeah, should do. You know, I'm excited, though, about the new studio. New channel, obviously, comes off the back of it. So if you like your golf equipment reviews, you like seeing Rick review golf clubs, well, good news. There's going to be loads more, maybe 2-3 a week, potentially. Everything and everything. Everything and anything you're going to review.
Yes.
Everything.
And the other benefit is I am going to be in there every single day grinding my little hands off.
Yep.
Getting better at golf.
Mm.
Every day. You can be like, where's Rick? Oh, grinding.
Well, that's the thing. Grinding. There's not really any excuse then for you not to be a really good golfer.
I'm quite literally, I want to go from the podcast studio to the grind zone.
That sounds weird. Grind zone. Then there's a dungeon.
I want to be in there just getting work done. I don't want to give too much away, but I can literally work on every single part of my golf game in that room.
All you'll do is go for ball speed with driving.
And we've got one of the world, and I mean this, biggest simulator screens. I think it's going to need to be replaced probably weekly.
Yes.
For the amount of grind I'm going to be doing in that room.
Mm. Also, we can do some more tip videos for the Facebook and stuff. So if you want some more little tips, they will be coming, I believe.
It's going to happen.
I'm excited. I feel like my head's gone a bit after today's little thing happened halfway through. I feel like yours has really gone.
This feels like a really good, strong performance first half.
Yeah.
Half time came, big announcement. Second half has been sloppy.
Yeah.
We've let a one-nil lead slip.
It will be worth it when you can announce, or when you do announce what you're doing.
Worth it. Guys, thanks for listening, watching. Make sure you like and subscribe. Check out every single video we're going to be releasing over the next few weeks, because honestly, it's going to be epic. Sawgrass is out Friday, 4 p.m, break 75 at Sawgrass. It's possibly one of my most favourite episodes ever, and I keep saying that a lot recently.
Every week.
But genuinely, it's one of the greatest episodes ever. And then we will be back home, Little Aston, followed by JCB, me and Guy, loads more videos. And I'm going to now go and lie down in a dark room and just consider...
Play with yourself. Sorry. On that note, we'll go.
Yeah. And make more OnlyFans. Right, thanks for watching. See you soon.
Bye-bye.
And peace.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.